Hello, this is a public communique issued by the Provisional Council of the Republic of Canada. It's Friday, April 24th, 2020. A united resistance movement forms to oppose police state regime in Canada. Justin Trudeau and others to be charged with treason and criminal conspiracy in a common law court action. You can learn the details of this action and this communique this Sunday, April 26th on bbsradio.com/herewestand, the voice of the Republic, Sunday, 3 p.m. Pacific. The communique reads, Canadians are faced today with the single greatest threat to their lives and liberties, not a flu virus, but a domestic police state. Under the guise of an exaggerated health emergency, an illegal regime of rule by decree has replaced the rule of law and democracy in Canada. Exceeding his authority and powers, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has outlawed free speech, assembly, movement, and dissent across Canada by issuing unlawful decrees not authorized by Parliament or by a court of law. Canada is now operating under a state of indefinite martial law, where people can be summarily arrested and imprisoned without due process. These destructions of our most cherished and fundamental liberties can never be justified, especially on the grounds of a corona flu virus, which is not as lethal nor as prevalent as a normal seasonal flu. Trudeau's actions and the police state they are creating are part of a proven global corporate agenda to impose mandatory vaccinations and biometric microchipping on a controlled and enslaved world population. We must all say no to this monstrous genocidal plan. In response to the present tyranny, we, the free people of Canada, are today publicly charging Justin Trudeau and his accomplices with criminally conspiring to commit violence and treason against all Canadians. We declare Trudeau and others to be public enemies and threats to the safety and liberty of Canadians. We shall so charge and indict them in an upcoming common law court of justice that will seek to restrain and depose their dictatorship. Accordingly, we call upon all Canadians to refuse to obey or to cooperate with Trudeau's private statutes. As decrees made outside the law and Parliament, these rulings have no authority or power over any of us, and we are not required to obey or give our consent to them. We therefore call upon the civil servants, police, RCMP officers, and soldiers of Canada to uphold our sacred liberties by refusing to enforce any of Trudeau's decrees that deny us our rights and freedoms. We declare that any of these public servants and officers who assist tyrannical measures will be considered accessories to a crime against the people and thereby liable for prosecution in courts of law. To coordinate this campaign of active civil disobedience and the recovery of liberty, we are calling today for the creation of a united resistance across Canada to organize this fight and to encourage and organize Canadians to defend themselves and their children and their communities in the face of a dictatorship. We propose that our resistance unites around these three common goals: to end all forced quarantines, curfews, distancing, and other restrictions that assault our liberty, to oppose all mandatory vaccinations, and to restore the rule of law and democracy. We must all unite now, not only to resist the Trudeau tyranny, but to reclaim the nation for all its peoples by establishing a new constitutional republic that will safeguard our liberty. The present tyranny in Canada is the rotten fruit of a legacy of foreign colonial rule by decree and genocide that must be replaced by a free and equal society that is self-governed by and for all the people. The time for genuine independence and freedom has arrived. For years now, we in the Republican movement have been actively creating this new society in many communities across Canada by building neighborhood assemblies, local common law courts, and citizen defense groups under elected sheriffs. These seeds of direct democracy have now become our first line of defense against arbitrary arrest and other repressive measures of the Trudeau tyranny. We urge everyone to embrace citizenship in the new republic and live within the freedom and protection of its sovereign national jurisdiction. These are the times that try our souls, but we will not despair or walk in fear of one another, for we remember that we are not descended from timid or frightened people. Our ancestors and our allies, seen and unseen, here and abroad, stand with us now and forever in this sacred battle for liberty. So take hope by taking a stand with us today. Join the United Resistance and fight back. No cooperation with the police state. Reclaim the nation for we the people, and end to tyranny now. This is issued by the Provisional Council of the Republic of Canada, Friday, April 24th, 2020. Contact us at republicofcanada@gmail.com. Carry it on.
And welcome to Here We Stand. I'm your regular host, Kevin Annett, Eagle Strong Voice. It's April 26th. Well, there we have it, folks. Thrown down the gauntlet. The gauntlet has been thrown down to us already by this encroaching police state. And now the question is, what are we going to do about it? That's been the focus of our work now for a number of weeks. And we have great results pouring in from all over Canada and all over the continent, really. You might have picked up here and there the evidence of fightbacks going on, random protests, that kind of thing. In fact, it's much more extensive than is the corporate media is letting on. We get reports regularly from people doing things like, for example, I'll give you one. I got a call today from someone, I won't say where in Canada, but spontaneously the folks in their neighborhood decided, look, why have the playground shut off with yellow tape along the slides and swings where our children normally play? That's ridiculous. We're going to go in there, clean it up ourselves, cut this police tape, and just open it up. Three people decided to do that. But they didn't tell anyone. They just went in and did it. And here was a playground with no tape around it. Well, within a couple of hours, when everyone saw that, suddenly the place was filled with about three dozen kids and their families. And what's interesting is the police have not done anything about it because the people acted with their feet. They spoke directly. They discovered their power just by doing it. And so they've liberated that public space. And that's one of the first things we ask people to do. Not only take back your own mind, go into the silence and the peace of your own self, turn off the machines and the internet. You know what's the problem is, you know what you need to do. Just go within yourself and you know what the answer is. And then act. Act in your own family. Don't be afraid. Start socializing. The person I'm going to have on today, Ted Kuntz, of the Vaccine Choice Canada, he's my guest, he'll be on in a few minutes. He's going to go into detail about all of the evidence showing that distancing and all of these other measures they're brought in are not medically warranted or justified any more than is the stripping of our civil rights, the closing of our courts and parliament, all of it obviously due to another agenda. But this is what we say to people, take back your own neighborhood first, reclaim the public space. And that's what we've been encouraging and organizing people to do all over Canada. We're going to have more of that. And I wanted to also remind folks that out of the announcement today, there is several groups all over the country that are uniting on the basis of those three points, the end of the quarantine, the end of restrictions, no mandatory vaccinations, and a restoring of democracy and the rule of law. Those three demands are beginning to unite people into united national resistance. And that we are extending as well to other countries, people who are fighting back. So stay tuned for more of that. And like I said, republicofcanada@gmail.com is a way to contact us to become part of that movement. So what I want to do now is bring on our guest, Ted Kuntz. You can find his work at vaccinechoicecanada.com. And it's a pleasure and an honor to have you with us, Ted, because before we can act, we need to be knowledgeable. We've got to be equipped with understanding, and that's what we're going to do today. So welcome to the show.
Hi, Kevin. Thanks for inviting me. I'm excited to be a part of the show and doing what we can to help liberate Canada.
Thank you, Ted. Well, why don't you start by giving a background about who you are and what your organization is and some of the salient points you want to make, you know, in terms of the issue today.
Well, I'm the current chair of the board of directors of Vaccine Choice Canada, and we are a community mostly of parents from across Canada whose children have been injured or killed by vaccination. I lost my own son to vaccine injury in 2017, and so for me this is very personal, and I join, unfortunately, many other parents across the country who have witnessed the loss of their child's abilities and sometimes their life as a result of vaccination. The movement began back in 1982 in Ontario when the Ontario government instituted mandatory vaccination laws that did not allow for religious or exemptions for conscience, personal conscience. And this group of parents came together under the title of Vaccine Risk Awareness Network and was able to lobby the government to include those considerations. And so for the last many years, 30-some-odd years, we've been the mandate of just informing Canadians about you know, the risks that are associated with vaccination. We are committed to protecting the right to informed consent, which is under threat. And, you know, people, you know, the mainstream media tends to misrepresent us as being anti-vaccine, and that's dishonest. The fact is that we're pro-choice. We're pro-informed consent, pro-therapeutic choice, bodily sovereignty, and the right of parents to make right. medical decisions for their children.
Right. In other words, you're standing by the rule of law.
Geez, what a novel idea, isn't it?
Yeah.
But, you know, yes. you said it in your opening remarks, Kevin. I mean, we're up against something that we've never seen before, and it's not a virus. We see respiratory infections every winter, and Dr. Joel Kettner, who was the former chief medical officer of Manitoba, said it very clearly. He said, I've seen one of these every year for 30 years. What we haven't seen is this massive lockdown of our society, the depriving us of our rights and freedoms, our right to privacy, our right to earn a living. You know, I have to say it's absolutely shocking. I would say this is the most serious global crisis in modern history. And I think what I find so shocking is that virtually all of the countries of the world have submitted to this narrative with no evidence, and the lone exception is Sweden, who has resisted all of that that pressure and said, you know what, we're going to treat our citizens as adults, we're going to give them some information and allow them their freedoms to make decisions on their own. Again, what a novel idea.
Well, let me ask you about that before.
Yeah, go ahead.
Let me just ask you a question. Remember a number of years ago, the swine flu, snafu. And after it, one of the chief, I believe he was one of the scientists who worked for one of the top pharma companies, referred to it as an angst campaign where they wanted to boost their corporate profits. They made over $10 billion. They bought off all the governments to tell everyone there was this horrible swine flu. And the death, of course, was a lot lower than people had predicted. So, you know, it's not like this hasn't happened before.
Right.
And, you know, so what in your mind is different about it now and what might be behind it, in your opinion?
Well, you're absolutely right. We've seen this before, and you know what we see is that who benefits from this is the pharmaceutical industry that makes huge profits selling a product that is often ineffective and dangerous. You know, I don't know what to make of all of this, Kevin. I mean, it's for us to see something like this that is global, where the global citizens have lost their rights and freedoms is, like I said, it's unprecedented. I you know, there's all kinds of thought that there's more of an agenda to this, and, you know, I'm not in a position to know what their agenda is, but I have to see that they have created a narrative that has us living in fear. And what I see is that people willingly are giving up their rights and freedoms as a result of that fear. They've become submissive in a way that is disturbing. And I'm shocked at how little real evidence-based making is going on. The government has removed our ability to hold them accountable by closing of our parliaments, by closing of our courts. You know, we've lost even the most basic democratic rights that we would take for granted.
Right.
And
very much like a coup. I think everyone's agreed that a coup has occurred.
Well, we're not witnessing the Canada that we knew 2 months ago. You know, literally this country shifted direction. It has a completely different agenda. It doesn't seem to be making decisions based upon evidence in Canada. I don't know where they're getting their direction from, but I would suggest it's not from Canadian authorities. It's coming from somewhere else, and so that's disturbing.
Now, Ted, let me ask you something. On your very excellent VaccineChoiceCanada.com site, there's a thing you posted: message to Canadians concerned about government overreach, and there was. 17 points in there. I'd really like to go through some of these because it's such a very thorough summary of what the problem is. Could you address some of that? Like the first one, there's no scientific evidence to substantiate the effectiveness of social distancing as a medical intervention to reduce COVID-19 transmission and infection. Do you want to talk maybe about that and other issues in there?
Yeah, you know, so what we've got here, this is the first time we've seen this kind of an intervention. You know, you have to be 6 meters or 2 meters, 6 feet away from somebody. And there is actually no scientific evidence that demonstrates that that's an effective method to reduce transmission and infection. You know, we might think it is, that might be a fair assumption, but if you're actually looking for evidence-based practices, this is not one of them. And then the concern is that self-isolation measures that's being imposed upon us is actually preventing the development of natural immunity, which is necessary then to secure herd immunity. So, you know, what's becoming evident is that the recommended medical practice here is actually prolonging the outbreak and putting more people, more lives at risk by this intervention. And so it seems very short-sighted, and I can't understand how our government can't see beyond the immediate impact and is not taking into consideration the consequence of not only on our economy, the health of our families, the health of citizens, and the health of our democracy. It's shocking.
Well, you know, the other kind of common sense tells us that the way you build up natural immunities is by exposure to something. If you're isolated, you won't get the chance to that. So do that. And when you come out, you're going to become even more sick, which seems to be their agenda.
Well, and I understood in the beginning, they talked about flattening the curve. They were concerned. I think, you know, if I'm going to be compassionate, I'm going to say that in the beginning, they didn't have any information. They were working on a set of assumptions that have since been proven to be invalid and false. But, you know, let's give them the benefit of the doubt. They thought there was going to be this huge mass dying of humanity. That's not turned out to be the case.
Just a question about that. Sorry to interrupt, but when you said that they believed there would be a mass dying off, what would they have based that belief on?
That's a very good question, Kevin, and it's a question that I've been wondering because the WHO declared, as a World Health Organization, that we had a pandemic when I think there was only something like 55 deaths outside of China. So somehow or other, they, you know, either they had a crystal ball or they knew something that they're not sharing with us, but they very quickly decided that this was something completely different than every other respiratory infection that we experience every winter, and decided that extraordinary measures of quarantine were required to address it. And they've never justified that. They've offered the modeling from, you know, from the UK and other places that they have since realized that they were invalid. So you're absolutely right. What justified this kind of action? And then when they realized that those modeling numbers were in fact false, how come they can't back up and say, you know what? We thought it best to err on the side of caution. We now recognize that the mortality is nowhere near what we thought it was. Current data is suggesting that it is a typical of an annual influenza outbreak in terms of the mortality data. You know, we've never done this before. So what's the justification now? And those are questions that we demand answers for. And without the opportunity of Parliament and courts, we're not seeing that. We don't have the opportunity to hold them accountable to their decisions.
Right. And, you know, what's, as you've pointed out, and many of us have, what does that have to do with closing Parliament, closing the courts, even preventing people from walking in forests? The Trudeau has even said the other day that any criticism of the COVID measures are now illegal. So he's, you know, turning back 1,000 years of law and saying you will be prosecuted for your opinion. So, I mean, that's on a totally qualitatively different level of attack and shutdown. So any thoughts on that?
Well, and I agree with you, Kevin. I mean, many of these measures that they've taken have nothing to do with medical intervention. As you said, the closure of the courts of law is unprecedented. It's illegal, it's unconstitutional, undemocratic, unnecessary, and it impedes the ability of Canadians to hold our governments accountable. The same is true with our closure of Parliament. I mean, even during world wars, we did not close our parliaments. So these are not medical measures. So what are they? What's the purpose of them? And I am aware of the intention of this government, or at least the declaration that they're considering measures to outlaw criticism. You know, what kind of a country are they trying to create here for us? It's not the Canada that I grew up in and had thought that I was a free citizen of. To me, this is, as you say, I think the word coup might actually be appropriate. We've lost the government that we had 2 months ago.
Well, Justin's own dad brought in the Water Measures Act. I remember I was 14 years old, and he justified it on the basis of 10 guys in Quebec with a bunch of guns. Everyone was under martial law for almost a month. It turned out it was all bogus, and that people then carried on after. So, I mean, they've dabbled in this stuff before, but this seems to be a permanent restructuring, so we're living under permanent martial law.
Well, and I think that's the thing that I'm seeing is that they're saying that we're not going to get back to normal. So it's like they're declaring, don't expect normal ever again. We've changed the rules of society here, and you better get used to it. And so the two pieces that I've taken from Mr. Trudeau is we're not going to get back to normal until a vaccine has been developed. Well, you know, that's like asking for a unicorn right now. They've been working on a coronavirus vaccine for about 20 years. Unsuccessfully. It turns out that it's very challenging to create a vaccine for coronaviruses because it tends to cause what's called disease enhancement, where it actually increases the consequences of the disease when people are reinfected with the virus. And so it seems like they're promoting what appears to be a very dangerous vaccine, and they've permitted the bypassing of you know, the limited safeguards that are in place in terms of safety testing, which are less than every other pharmaceutical product. They've waived those, and we're moving directly into human experimentation. I mean, I don't know how that's considered to be moral or ethical, but that's where we're at.
Well, morals and ethics don't seem to enter into it. I mean, the bottom line here is, you know, what's good for Big Pharma is good for the world. And I'm curious about the kinds of work you do. Maybe you could talk a little bit about your coalition and the successes, failures you've had, especially around at this time.
Well, you know, our work you're talking about is Vaccine Choice Canada, I assume. And so, you know,
yes.
Primarily throughout our history, our role has been one of educating parents. And so we have put out all kinds of materials. If you go to our website, I think we've got something like 1,600 research articles on the website, a tremendous amount of material that we've collected over 30 years or written over 30 years to educate parents, to help them make an informed, voluntary decision. And we've also done the lobbying work like I talked about in Ontario back in 1982. We were in New Brunswick last fall when the legislature there was looking at imposing mandatory vaccination for school attendance and removing exemptions. They talked about including the notwithstanding clause because they recognized that what they were doing was in fact a violation of charter rights and freedoms, but wanted to go ahead anyways. And so, you know, our work has moved from education to advocacy around protecting rights and freedoms. But when this, I would say the other action that we undertook last fall is that we made a conscious decision to take the Ontario government to court around their vaccine policies in that province, that they've been violating our rights and freedoms for more than 30 years. And so we thought it time to hold them accountable. So we're actually in that court process as we speak. We have submitted our statement of claim. They have submitted a statement of defense, which I have to admit was embarrassingly weak. They basically said vaccines are safe and effective. Vaccines are good for humanity. Vaccine saves millions of lives, and that's their statement of defense. That's not going to work in a court of law. We demanded evidence to substantiate those claims. As a matter of fact, we put together a list of evidence that we require, which was more than 5 pages long. So I'm interested to see how the Ontario government is going to be able to justify what they've been doing for 30 years. But this issue ahead.
No, you finish. Go ahead.
But this issue with the government's response to the so-called novel coronavirus, and I think that's just part of the narrative, but let's go with it, this is a bigger arena than we were playing in, but we thought, you know what, who else is going to step into here and defend our rights and freedoms? We've been advocates for 30 years and trying to hold the government accountable to rights and freedoms. And we thought, you know, we're a group of people that are knowledgeable. We've been reading the research. I've probably put in 10,000 hours of research over 30 years into this topic. And, you know, what I say to the others is that when you know something, you have a responsibility to tell people. And so we feel like we met as a board a few weeks ago and said, is this an issue that we are going to take on? It's bigger than our original mandate, but somebody's got to do it in Canada. So we're looking at how best to address that. One of the options we are considering is another legal challenge around how the government has responded to this COVID situation.
Well, that's a question I have for you, because you're talking about legal challenges, but the courts are closed right now. At least I know that some of them are supposedly online, however that's possible. But what is your situation in terms of that case? Is it actually going before a court?
Well, that remains to be seen. You're right, as they've closed the courts, my understanding is some of them are open to electronic submissions. So we're still working through what we think will be an effective strategy. That hasn't been determined yet, but what we do know is that it's important that we hold our government accountable, that we demand that they justify the violation of our rights and freedoms. I think there's no doubt in anybody's mind, or there shouldn't be any doubt, that they are violating our rights and freedoms. The question is whether it's justified, and we want to hold them accountable so that they have to explain their justifications with evidence. They can't simply base it upon a narrative or assumptions or guesses. At some point, they have to base it upon evidence, and if they've got the evidence, they haven't shared it with us yet.
Okay, the whole thing of accountability, what if it seems like we're in a situation where they're not worried about being accountable, they don't have to answer to anybody, and in fact, you know, Canada has a long history that on average, probably 3/4 of the laws passed in Canada are never even debated or entered into Parliament. They're passed order in council, no debate, no accountability. So it's not like this is a new way for Canada to operate, but
no.
In that situation,
right.
What do you do if you're being blocked?
Well, I think we try to go the responsible route, which is through the court process. I mean, and the other route is through Parliament. But as you said, we've also been restricted there. At some point, I suspect citizens are going to have to decide whether they're going to continue to go along and be complacent, or whether they're going to stand up and claim their authority as citizens,
right,
and their right as citizens. And you know, we're starting to see that happen, you know, with some of the protests that are starting to happen. I hear it more and more in conversations. You know, people are really coming to the realization this government doesn't have a plan out. You know, they keep putting us off 2 weeks, 2 weeks, 2 weeks. In the meantime, our economy is crashing. Families are suffering. People are going hungry. We're going to have to. It's time for us to grow up, and I think in many ways we've been acting like children, if I can use that word. And I think it's time that we take some responsibility for this country, and reclaim our power as citizens that we have unfortunately given away.
Well, here's one thing I wanted to throw out as part of this whole discussion, Ted, is, you know, on many other issues, people have found the same intractability and unaccountability by the Canadian government. And so we've experimented with convening common law courts and assemblies where people can take back the power, right? And we're entitled to do that under international law and by common law tradition going back 1,000 years. And so this would be a case that such a common law court, when convened, could certainly take up. And it has the power of a citizen-convened investigation and tribunal. Their verdicts have the power to be enforced by other courts around the world. You know, arrest warrants, other things can be issued by other courts. So they have great power. But people are systematically taught that we don't have the right or the power or the ability to do all that. And I want to put that out as a possibility that I think what you're talking about is a perfect case to bring before that kind of common law court to convene, you know, to be convened by the people themselves.
Well, Kevin, I have to say, you know, when you and I chatted last week, that was the first time I heard about those common law courts. And I was delighted to hear what you had to say. And I'm eager to learn more, because what I realize is we need better tools or better mechanisms to claim back our authority that we've lost. And that, you're right, it does sound like this is exactly what's required at this time.
Now, if you were, let's say you're the advisor to the prosecution in that case, that you're bringing a case against, you know, the Canadian government, whatever agencies are backing them or prompting them to do this, what is the claim you'd make? What is the thing you would like to see brought out in that kind of court setting?
Well, again, I'd like to know who's making the decisions. I'd like to know what advice they're receiving, what evidence they're basing those decisions upon, because my understanding is they don't have the scientific evidence to back up the medical interventions that they're demanding. And so I would want to know what evidence they are relying on and who's making those decisions and how they're making them, because what I see is that these decisions aren't being debated in our parliaments. They're not debated in committees. Public is not having input. I think we ought to have a say in how we move forward as a country. And it seems like we're being asked to simply being passengers in all of this as opposed to active citizens. So I would say, right, Let's start off with their evidence. I want to give them the benefit of the doubt. Tell me what you're doing and why you did it. And then we have to decide whether you're making reasonable and credible decisions that are based upon evidence and integrity, or whether there's another agenda here that's operating. And if they can't demonstrate that they're acting reasonably and responsibly and based upon evidence, then I suggest that we need to throw them out.
I just got a notice on my email here from a listener called Christine. Says, thank you, Ted, for speaking for so many Canadians. Rights and freedoms matter. Our children deserve a free country they can inherit. Thanks, Christine. There's a lot of people out here who are listening. Ted, this show goes all over the world, and it's actually syndicated by other stations that are plugged into the network that, you know, for many years, I've worked with survivors of crimes by church and state, child trafficking, satanic ritual killings, all of that. And what's amazing is you find exactly the same response or non-response from these powers that be. They pretend they're God. They don't have to be accountable to anybody. And yet they're very sensitive to any of this truth coming out. And we proved that when we helped force Pope Benedict to step down because of bringing out evidence that he had signed letters to bishops telling them to cover up the deaths of children. And, you know, that was a few people bringing that out. So I want to emphasize to everybody listening in that what you're talking about is great power because it's based on fact and evidence and truth. And it's a matter of strategically, where do we put that and how do we put it out?
Well, I would agree with you. I mean, what I know is that I'm a truth seeker. And if there's information that I'm not aware of, I'm willing to change my understanding based upon new information. And so what I see is that there's a lack of truth seeking happening in our mainstream media and in our parliament. But we do have the truth on our side. And so when we shine a light on it, it's going to expose it. And I can see why they don't want any criticism, because they can't, yeah. I believe they can't defend their position. And if they could, why would they not simply give us the information? We're adults. Treat us like adults, not like children.
What's weird, you know, is like all these members of parliament have kind of vanished. Like 338 members, only 32 of them gathered to shut themselves down. So that's not even a quorum of 10%. That right there was illegal, what they did. A rump of them deciding to do away with Parliament. But have you approached any members of Parliament, seen their opinion on this? But are they just being trained SEALs and being quiet, or what's going on?
Well, I've shared information with my member of Parliament. I reached out to her last week. I sent her some documents. I had a phone call with her. She was very receptive, said that she would take it back to her party. She's a member of the Conservative Party. I did see an interview on YouTube a couple of days ago where a member of the Conservative Party was asking Theresa Tam some very direct questions about the plan going forward. And it became very evident in that interview that Theresa Tam has no plan. You know, Prime Minister Trudeau has no plan. And I don't know whether, you know, they can't think too far ahead or whether they're waiting for direction from somebody else. But what became evident, at least in that interview, is there is no plan, or if they have one, they're not sharing it with us.
Right. So, I mean, obviously in that scenario, there's orders coming from somewhere else. And there's been a lot of speculation of who those other forces are, but go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, when you see that they can't articulate and justify the interventions that they've brought forward, they don't have evidence to support it, then the question becomes, well, obviously you're not making these decisions, so who is? You know, we can only speculate, but it doesn't appear like our Canadian government is making the decisions.
Well, we do know as a fact that Bill Gates is the largest funder of the World Health Organization to the tune of many billions of dollars, that he talks openly about microchipping the entire world's population using vaccines. I mean, there's a lot of evidence about that. And, you know, money talks in those cultures, so you follow the money. And that's often how you get the truth coming out. And then it's a question of, well, like you say, how much are people going to grow up now and take responsibility and say it's time to defy so-called authority because they're not legitimate authority anymore? And that's, you know, a long tradition in our culture to say when government is not accountable anymore, we have the right to remove that government. We have the right to defend our liberties because that's the bottom line.
Yeah, I would agree with you. You know, Mr. Gates, you know, he acts like he knows something about medicine, but last I heard he wasn't a trained medical doctor. But he has co-opted our World Health Organization, and he has been very clear about his agenda, which is worldwide vaccination and microchipping. And, you know, there are some people who say, oh, you know, Ted, you believe in conspiracy theories. And I say, all you have to do is listen to what he has to say. He's telling you what his agenda is, and he's very clear about that. And I think that we're naive in thinking those things won't happen, but they're happening in front of our eyes, and we just saw an incredible movement towards that in the last 2 months. We're not operating by the same principles we operated by last year. I think that's what's unnerving for me is I can't recognize my country anymore, and I can't predict where it's going to be in 2 months or 6 months because they're not operating in a predictable way any longer.
That's right. So, you know, one of my favorite books is The Art of War by Sun Tzu, and he says the basic fact of life as in war is that all things are unpredictable, and you have to be able to move on a moment's notice in a new direction. So I want to kind of, you know, put that out there to, you know, our assumptions right now have worked, but they don't work anymore. There's something else happening, and we need to be open to understand what that new thing is.
Well, that's what it seems to me. I mean, I believe, you know, I'm a psychotherapist. I was a psychotherapist in private practice for 30 years, and what I learned was behavior always makes sense when you have enough information. And so I believe that the behavior of this government makes sense when you have enough information. So the question is, what would make this behavior make sense of our Canadian government? And the fact that they're not sharing it says that there's something about that they don't want us to know. Because if they were being upfront and honest with us, they would declare. They would be very transparent, and I don't find this government transparent at all. If anything, I find them being very dishonest and manipulative. And, what concerns me is that when they evoke fear and hysteria and the mainstream media has really been complicit with them in this, And, you know, there's something that I read earlier today that says fear, manipulated fear, defeats knowledge and evidence every time. And I think what we've got here is people move into a basic survival mode of fight or flight, and it reduces their ability to think rationally and logically. And so we've got a country of many citizens that are operating at a very low level of cognitive ability. And that makes us incredibly vulnerable to being manipulated, which I believe is what's happening right now.
Well, you know, I've had personal experience how, you know, that all being true, it's actually not majorities who change society. It's active minorities, you know, lighting those brush fires of freedom in people's minds. And even a few can pose a threat to the system. I mean, it only took a couple dozen of us to force out the truth of genocide. And, you know, they didn't know how to maneuver around that, because we were intractable. And I would say, you know, that on this issue, it may seem overwhelming, but in fact, enough of us, you know, at the right place with the right information can really put them on the defensive. I've learned that in practice. And so I think it's a matter now of what we do with this knowledge and what new forums we create to give ourselves some clout.
I mean, what I see happening, Kevin, is people are starting to wake up, and sometimes that's what happens when you start to suffer. It forces an awakening. I mean, that was my own personal journey. I was a parent who didn't do my homework. I didn't do any research. I simply accepted my doctor's recommendation to vaccinate my son, and it was a result of his injury that I woke up and needed to take responsibility for that medical decision going forward. So sometimes sometimes suffering is actually the catalyst to wisdom.
Yes. Absolutely, it is.
I'm hopeful that humanity will become wiser as a result of this global crisis that we're facing, and get better at discerning, truth from falsehood.
That's exactly the opportunity given to us, and it's, you know, the old saying that crisis is an opportunity. And this is, in a big way, a chance for people to have such a big shock that a lot more of them not only just wake up, but have the guts to be able to step out of the system, say, no, we're not cooperating. We're going to reclaim our world, like, for example, setting up our own courts, our own inquiries, defending our own neighborhoods. I mean, because a lot of police don't like this. I remember a guy, he was out in Cape Breton, one of our people who work with us, and he said, I've gone to the local Mounties and cops, and they all agree with me. These quarantines and everything are totally unnecessary. So the police and others, they're human beings. They're fathers, mothers, just like us. They'll come over if there's the right leadership saying, look, we're living in a dictatorship now, and you don't play by the old rules, right?
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think many people recognize what's happening, but they're afraid, and they've been intimidated into silence, or they've been marginalized or made out to be quacks, and so they think that what they have to say or think is not valid. And, you know, somebody asked me about what I think about protests, and I says, we need to be able to show that there's people that are challenging the narrative, because I suspect many people are kind of in the closet, being quiet about their concerns, and we can't afford to be quiet any longer. We can't afford to just assume that our government is going to act in our best interest. The evidence is that they're not acting in our best interest. And so, again, I think this is time for us to grow up and go from being submissive to becoming assertive and taking responsibility for both our own lives and our government. Anything less than that, I think we're in big trouble.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I think they're taking a big risk. The powers that be are really gambling on this, because they can explode back in their face in a big way. I'll give you an example. There was in Vancouver, in the Kitsilano neighborhood, there was 25 people came up a few days ago, and they were just holding a protest about they didn't want to be quarantined anymore. And the BC Health Minister, Adrian Dix, writes a scathing denunciation of these 25 people, ordering, and it was like an order to the public through CBC interview he did. He said, do not listen to these people. Ignore them. Why would a government minister feel, with his back to the wall, the need to be so ridiculous and tell people, you know, here's what you have to think and do now, robots? That's a sign of weakness and fear on their part, you know.
Well, and again, when I hear that kind of a response by a minister, I find it really disappointing, because if they've got valid information to share with us that suggests that their course of action is the right course of action, give it to us, explain it to us, give us the data, help us to make those, participate in those decisions. But stop treating me like a child. And I resent when we've got governments who are telling me, don't think any different, don't ask questions, don't challenge the narrative. Yeah. In fact, I'm also supposed to go out and shame my neighbor and make sure that they're keeping social distance and they're walking the direction of the arrow. And, you know, God forbid that they're ridiculous. Playing on a swing in a park or something like that. You know,
it's going to break down, because you can't keep people locked up. You know, this is another sign of they don't think they planned this very well. Why didn't they do this in the middle of winter? You're doing it just as the buds are coming out. You know, people want to get out in the spring in the good weather. It's almost designed to create a powder keg that's going to explode. And, of course, that's sometimes the justification people do to bring in a police state. You know, all the violence, we now need more police state measures. But it doesn't seem to be really well planned out. It's like almost making up as they go along. Or is that maybe an illusion? I don't know.
Well, it's a good question, Kevin. I kind of feel like they're making it up as they go along, because of how they, they keep changing their mind. You know, first of all, masks weren't helpful, then they are helpful, and we didn't have to close the borders, then we do have to close the borders. And you know, it seems like, and all of that is, again, not based upon evidence. Like, show us some evidence, or if you don't have evidence, be honest. Say, you know what, we actually have no evidence whether social distancing works, but we think it's a good idea. Would you participate in it for a while so we can figure this out? You know, again, treat us like adults, but when you try to shame me into being 2 meters away from my neighbor, I have to say is that it's hard for me to participate in that kind of citizenship.
Well, and another point you made, of course, in the 17 points on your website was the last one. As of this date, the Prime Minister has not invoked the Emergency Act. Therefore, emergency measures announced to just stay home have no legal basis or authority, are an abuse of power. Well, we go even further. We don't have to obey, you know, comments or statutes put out by a private individual calling himself the Prime Minister. There's a long history, including U.S. Supreme Court rulings that say statutes brought in by government have no authority over us without our informed consent. So it doesn't even matter what statutes they bring in. We don't have to go along with them if we're not harming anybody. And there's no, like you say, no evidence that just walking down the street is going to harm somebody. So it's, in other words, people can ignore these comments by Trudeau. They don't have any basis. They're not laws.
And I think, unfortunately, people don't understand that he actually has no authority, no legal authority to make the kinds of statements that he's making. So he's speaking as a private citizen. And again, I wish he was honest with us in saying, I don't have any authority because I haven't invoked the Emergency Act. Parliament is not functioning. So I'm speaking to you as another citizen of Canada. Like, tell the truth.
Right.
And it's when it's this lack of transparency, it's this lack of integrity that then begins to undermine. What can I trust in what he has to say? That's the part that really starts to crumble, because I'm losing any confidence that I'm working with the government, or that we have a government that's acting in a reasonable, responsible, ethical way.
Well, don't forget, the same Justin Trudeau just last year admitted that genocide has occurred in Canada. And the Health Canada that's pushing all this COVID nonsense, they're the same agency that sterilized and medically experimented on generations of little Indian children. And so I say to people, you're going to trust these people? You know, these genocidal actors. I mean, under international law, the minute Trudeau said that, there should have been a war crimes trial, and he should have been put under arrest, because that's the law. Canada has to be prosecuted and punished for proven genocide. So this is a great distraction for him, but he is liable. It isn't just the SNC-Lavalin scandal that has him liable. He is acting in the capacity of a war criminal, in my opinion. And you know, this is a good way to get around any accountability. You just keep distracting with more threats of bogus viruses, right?
Well, and when you start to read the history of vaccination and the experiments that they did, Stanley Plotkin, who is considered to be the grandfather of vaccination, admitted under testimony last year that they did all kinds of experimenting on natives, on prisoners, yep. on children that were in care, orphans, mothers in prison, and you start to realize this is not an ethical or moral organization, that they, right. you know, they violate the most basic fundamental laws of morality under the guise of doing greater good. And to me, you can't do both. You can't violate all of those morals and ethics and then claim that you're acting for the greater good. But most of
well, not only that said, but you know, not only that, but everything you're talking about, the forced vaccinations, the experimentation, all of those are crimes against humanity under international law and conventions that Canada has signed, like the Genocide Convention of 1948. It outlawed those things. Canada's continuing to doing them. So international law, all these things are just paper. They're never, ever enforced. It's up to people to enforce them. And that's, we've got to, like we're talking about today, we've got to find new and creative ways of getting even a rump, even a small number of us, to set an example of how to take back your country and act. Because there is no government now, is there? I mean, there's no parliament, there's no courts. We have to be it. What else do we have?
Well, and again, I like to, maybe I'm naive, but I like to think that there's the potential that this would become a transformative, a catalytic event for Canadians and for humanity in general, that they recognize that we have given way too much authority to a small group of people. And we're doing it now to unelected people like Bill Gates and Theresa Tam mm-hmm. and, you know, Bonnie Henry and other chief medical officers who are not elected. And so, you know, mm-hmm. they shouldn't have the authority to dictate our lives the way we've allowed that to happen. And so we need to figure out how to reclaim our authority as citizens.
They don't have authority. That's the point. And it's kind of like a guy pulls a gun out, holds it to your head and say, hi, I'm in charge, aren't I? And everyone nods. It doesn't mean they're legitimate or legal or they're in authority because of their gun. And that's basically the situation. There's a huge gun held to all of our heads. And the point is we have to be able to face it and stand them down and, you know, see it for what it is. It's just criminality and gangsterism.
Yeah, it's not legitimate authority, is it? And you know what I keep saying is who would have thought that this tyranny would happen under the guise of the medical profession? I mean, talk about a wolf in sheep's clothing. They've come and extracted away our humanity, our rights, but under this guise of the greater good.
You talked about the notwithstanding clause in the Canadian Charter of Rights. One of the notwithstanding clauses they inserted a number of years ago was health emergencies. You can suspend, you know, these rights under health emergencies. So I would suggest this thing has been in the works for a while, because that's exactly the scenario playing out now.
Well, there seems to be a script here, doesn't there? And the fact that it's happening
Definitely.
Virtually in every country around the world at the same time...
Yep.
Whether, you know, you look at countries that have one or two deaths and they're enacting the same kind of lockdown as countries like Italy.
Absolutely.
You know, so what I see is that the mortality, rate of mortality, the number of deaths is not the factor that's determining this. So
Another
what is
Another agenda. Well, let's hold that. Ted, we've only got a few minutes left. I want to thank you so much for coming on. Any final words? You've got about a minute here.
Well, you know, somebody said something to me the other day that I thought really touched me, and it says, you know, the golden rule was love thy neighbor as thyself, and what's been happened in the last 2 months is now we've got fear thy neighbor as thyself. We're afraid of our neighbors, and we're even afraid of ourselves, and we can't live under this kind of fear. We have to get back to a place of love and compassion for our fellow citizens and live as free citizens. You know, living as if we're under martial law, there's no future in that.
Exactly. Ted, thank you so much. I want to have you back on again soon. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for inviting me. Appreciate it.
Okay. We'll talk soon.
Take care.
And that was That was Ted Kuntz. And I want to again urge folks to go to his site. It's vaccinechoicecanada.com. And thanks for all the comments pouring in, folks. I meant to tell everyone listening that in the last 2 weeks, our network and me personally have received more offers of support and volunteers of any time in our history. It's quadrupled in the last few weeks. People are outraged, and you may not see it, maybe you do, in your neighborhood, among your friends, but it's building. And we need the steam, but we also need the piston to run the steam, folks. That's how engines operate. And we are the piston. We're organizing people at the grassroots to take back their nation, establish common law assemblies under a new republic, under the Common Law Republic of Canada. And we're doing it on the ground. We're creating that alternative. So to be involved in that, write to us, republicofcanada@gmail.com. See murderbydecree.com for a lot of the background evidence. In the coming weeks, we're going to have an insider who used to work in the Canadian government talking about incredible corruption he witnessed, and not just corruption, but murder, child trafficking, and killing going on Parliament Hill. We're going to have an insider talking about that. We're going to have Ted and others on, and we're going to have people on the ground across the country talking about how they are fighting back and resisting. Now, if you're in your community, tune every Sunday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern here at Here We Stand on the BBS Radio Network. I want to thank you. We're going to close on this song, which is a very inspiring one from the Civil Rights Movement. Before I'll be a slave, I'll go to my grave and then join in freedom in the sky or something like that. Those are great lyrics. But this is the point, folks. We're not going to be slaves. We're going to live and die as free people. I love the quote from the state of New Hampshire, live free or die. That's from the revolution. Well, that's our slogan today, folks. Stay strong, stay clear. We'll see you next week.